So in this text, we have studied two aspects of spiritual progress, or two paths. The path of karma yoga, the path of service, doing all activities dedicated to the Lord, without I and my, without ego. And the second is the path of love, where there is total identification, that, you know, complete surrender of the ego to the Lord in love. And there the person sees everything as an expression of the Lord. All this whole world, this whole universe is nothing but the Lord himself. And ultimately he comes to the conclusion that the Lord that has created everything has created me, and I am not separate. And that is the highest devotion. He is me. We had talked about last week. Now we shall start the third path, they call as the path of yoga. When we say yoga, people understand yoga as the physical exercises. You know, when we say yoga, okay, you go to a class and then the teacher is asking you to bend and, you know, stretch your arms and breathe. So bending and breathing, these are the two aspects that are very popular all over the world. When they talk about yoga, that's what comes to our mind. But yoga has a lot more. The word yoga comes from the root yuj. Yuj means to unite. So yoga means to unite with the higher, to unite with the Lord. That is yoga. So physical exercises and breath control, of course, are an integral part of it, but they are not the only part. And today I'll try to cover all the eight aspects of yoga. We may or may not have time to do the verse, but we'll just at least do the introduction of what exactly is meant by yoga. There was a great sage called Patanjali in ancient India. He came up with the Ashtanga Yoga. Ashta means eight, Anga means limbs. So the yoga that he preached or practiced or came up with has eight limbs. So it's not only physical and breath control, but there is a lot more which we need to understand, which we need to practice. And so we'll just briefly go over that. Of course, this each topic is very huge. I'm not going to go into detail. I can talk in detail about just the first one, non-injury, non-stealing and all. It will take a long time, but we'll just cover in brief. So the first aspect of yoga is yama. Yama means practicing the values. Values of life. So those have to be practiced. So what are the values of life? Ahimsa, that is non-injury. Because how can I hurt somebody? How can I injure somebody? I can injure somebody with my action, you know, by slapping them or, you know, shooting them or whatever. I can injure somebody by my words. Words sometimes are more dangerous than action, because if you hit somebody, the injury may heal in a week or a month. But if you say something wrong or mean or wicked, that person can remember for months or years. You know, 3 years ago you told me this. So injury can be verbal, can be by action, or even by thought. You can even have a hateful thought about somebody. That also we consider as himsa, as injury, because thinking negative thoughts, first of all, creates negative thoughts, emotions in your mind, and then you project that negativity to the other person, so the other person can sense it or feel it, and ultimately the thoughts do lead to violent words and violent actions. So ahimsa is non-injury by action, by speech, or by thought. Asteya is not stealing. That everybody knows. We don't need to spend too much time. But trying to acquire what I do not rightfully deserve. One is, of course, you go to somebody's house and steal a valuable. But also in business, you know, if you cheat somebody or take over a part of their business, or your customer, if you are not fair or honest to that person, that also is stealing. So stealing is, it can be, you know, in your personal life, can be in your business life. Then brahmacharya is self-control. In Hinduism, brahmacharya is only, a lot of people think only it is a control of the sexual desires. But brahmacharya means living a life of moderation. So in all my desires, you know, in eating, drinking, even talking too much, even indulging too much, you know, too much of travel, too much of enjoyment, where your whole life is just spent in having fun. So brahmacharya is self-control and living a life of moderation, eating in moderation, talking in moderation, working in moderation with self-control, not over, you know, workaholics and all that. So, and then satya is truthfulness. Truthfulness, again, we don't need to explain very much, but basically it means a congruence between what I think, what I speak, and what I act. So truthfulness is not only telling the truth in speech, but whatever I am thinking, that should come in my speech and that should come in my action. Like somebody comes to your house, you know, on a Saturday morning and you say, oh, why did this guy show up? You know, he's a bore, he's a useless person. And then when he comes, oh, so nice to see you. I'm so glad you. So that, of course, you know, we shouldn't tell that person, no, why did you come? But the point is that if you say something and then you're thinking something, so if you really mean it, that you're happy to see that person, then think that also. It's okay. He came. The Lord has come to my house. So truthfulness is congruence between your speech, your thoughts, and your actions. And when any of them, when they do not, you know, like it's a lot of people give very good advice, you know, but when it comes to practice, they don't. They say, do as I say, not as I do. You know, and children pick up on that. You know, mom and dad say, we tell the truth, do this, do that. But then in their life, they don't. So truthfulness is practicing in at all levels. And then not hoarding. Again, we are by nature a very hoarding race. You know, we want to accumulate. We want to collect. We are so worried. You know, we don't know what will happen tomorrow. What will happen after retirement? Will my children take care of me? Yeah, you need some amount of security and some amount of safety. But excessive hoarding and collecting things that you don't need. So they say when you have too much, share it. Whether you have too much wealth, you have too many clothes, you have too many possessions. Sharing. And also knowledge. You know, people get knowledge and they say, I have it, it's okay. But if you have knowledge, share it with others. So hoarding can be at the bodily level, even can be at the level of knowledge. If you have a lot of love in your heart, share it with others. You know, go and visit somebody in a nursing home, or, you know, somebody who is sick in the hospital, somebody who's had a death in the family. So sharing. So these are the values that we practice, yama. The second is called niyama. Niyama is living a life of control, self-control. One is practicing values, and second is living a life of self-control. So in that, there are values like purity. Purity is not only cleanliness of the body. You know, nowadays, there's a lot of emphasis on bodily cleanliness. You must smell good. You must, you know, wear nice clothes and look good, which is good. But also inner purity is very important. How my mind is. Is my mind free of anger? Is it free of greed, of jealousy, of hatred? So practicing inner purity. And then the third is purity of the surroundings. You know, you may have very pure heart, you may be a very clean person, but if you go, your desk is just a mess, you know, papers all over, or your closet is full of clothes thrown everywhere, or your room or your home is full of dirt, you know, full of things. So having an organized mind, having an organized body, and then your surroundings. So keeping a clean desk, keeping a clean closet, keeping a clean room, clean house. So that is purity. Then the other aspect of this is contentment. Now, contentment people misunderstand. They say, does that mean that I shouldn't progress? You know, I'm content with whatever I get, so I shouldn't do anything. We are not saying that. What we say is that I must put my best effort. I must work as hard as I can. I must do the best I can. But at the end of the day, whatever the Lord has given me as a result of my efforts, I say, Lord, I'm thankful to you. Whatever I have, I am grateful. Contentment is accompanied by gratefulness. Lord, I'm thankful. You have given me this human body. You have given me the abilities to work, and I have done my best. and I get what I deserve. And that is very important, not to get what I desire, but get what I deserve. And that is very important because people think, I must get everything I want. Then only I'll be contented. You will never get everything you want, never. You can never be contented. So they say, I get what I deserve, and he knows, the Lord knows what I deserve. So if I got this, oh Lord, even if I didn't get the job, I didn't deserve it. Somebody else deserved it more. Tomorrow I go for the next interview, I'll try harder, I'll try better. So you don't stop trying, but do not have this attitude of discontentment, unhappy all the time. What did I get? You know, I don't get anything. The Lord is partial to me. Look at my neighbor. You know, he never prays. He never goes to church. And how come he has a BMW and I'm driving this old, you know, Chevy? So not like that, but contentment, thankful to the Lord, whatever we have. And tapa is austerity. Austerity is self-control, doing some practices that deprive yourself of something, like people fast. You know, in Hindus, they fast on the Ekadashi, on the 11th day of the moon. Muslims fast the month of Ramadan. And then Christians in the month of Easter, you know, they give up something they like, something they enjoy. So practicing this, and then when you have given up or when you are fasting, then at that time, instead of thinking about food, think about God. That it is for God that I am giving up. So that is austerity, giving up something so that what it does is it teaches you self-control. So you are not a slave to your body, you are not a slave to your mind, but you decide what is good for me rather than my mind or my body control me. So that is develop self-control. Then swadhyaya is study of the scriptures. Study means study of the scriptures. So every day one must make it a habit of reading something good every night before you go to bed, at least half an hour or 1 hour. Read some good books, some good teachings, maybe listen to some good CDs, you know, or some good messages on the internet you can. But read things that will elevate your mind, that will turn your mind towards God, you know, listening to some, you know, spiritual music. But listening is okay, but some amount of study must be done. Some amount of reading or some amount of knowledge I should acquire every day for my spiritual growth. And then the last one is Ishvara Pranidhara, surrender to the Lord. Lord, ultimately, you are the one who has done everything. Whatever abilities I have received from you. Without your grace, I am, you know, not able to do anything. I am nothing. So that attitude of total surrender and total gratitude to the Lord and the loss of ego, because we feel that I have done so much, I am so great, so that I and mine should reduce, and he and his, so everything belongs to him, that attitude. Then asana is the postures. That is what we are all familiar with. You know, when you go to the class, in the, you know, the yoga class, and the teacher makes you bend or makes you do all those different poses. So those are good for the body. They increase flexibility of the body. They are good for health. They even, you know, increase, you know, they help your mind to relax also, doing those exercises when they are done softly and slowly and correctly. And also they are good for certain hormonal, you know, certain exercises are good for increasing certain hormones like thyroid and so on. So the postures, but again, they should be learned from a teacher. Yoga should be learned properly from a teacher. And the fourth is pranayama or breath control. So pranas are the physiological functions. So breath control, again, there are various techniques of breath control, which again should be learned from a teacher. Breath control, the serious breath control, pranayama, should be learned from a teacher. One should not try to learn it from a video or just learn it on your own by reading a book. It should be learned from a teacher. But what we practice here, and the easiest form of pranayama, is breath observation, where you don't need to learn anything. All you do is close your eyes and observe the breath as it goes in and out, as it goes in and out. So breath observation helps to quieten the mind, and we'll be talking in more detail about it this next week, in the next week or two. But breath observation is one of the most powerful techniques. But if you have learned pranayama from a teacher, you know, things like bhastrika and all those techniques that you learn, then you can practice those. And if not, you can just observe your breath, and you will find that just observing the breath, or the simple breathing that we do here, anulom vilom, we have done that. So just breathing helps to quieten the mind, because the breath and the mind are very intimately connected. And we'll talk more about that next week. So these are the first four. Now, why are we doing this? You know, we thought we are in a meditation class, right? This meditation is the seventh. You say, why are you talking about all this stuff? You know, what is the need for that? They say that unless you practice all these steps, your meditation will not be good. It's like you're trying to bake a cake, you know, and in the cake you leave out an essential ingredient. You forget to put sugar, or you forget to put shortening. Isn't that shortening that raises the dough? You forget to put that, or the shortening, or the sugar. And then when you bite into the cake, it doesn't taste good. Why? Because you forgot an important ingredient. So these are important ingredients. Unless you do these, all of them, your meditation, which is number seven, which comes after all these, it does not mean that I have to wait till I develop all those qualities in 100% before I start meditation. We're not saying that. But as you are meditating, consciously develop these qualities, self-control, purity of thoughts, so that your meditation will become more fruitful. Meditation will be better if your mind is quiet, if your mind is pure. So the fifth, talking about meditation, reminds me of a little story. This man asked his friend, so how is your son? So is he still unemployed? He said, yeah, he's unemployed, but he's meditating. He said, meditation? What is meditation? He said, I don't know, but it's better than sitting around doing nothing. So meditation, a lot of people think, is just sitting around doing nothing. So next, the fifth one is pratyahar. Pratyahar means to withdraw, because our mind is so engrossed in the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts. Our eyes want to see, our ears want to hear, we want to taste, we want to touch, we want to possess. So withdraw the mind from the sense organs. So withdrawing the mind, because all the time just looking for happiness outside will not give you happiness. True happiness is within. So withdraw from the external and dharana, and focus the mind inward. So withdraw the mind from the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts, and focus it on the self. Focus it on the purity. When you sit for meditation, you can think about the Lord, or you can think about the Lord's form, or you can think about something in nature. The idea is that instead of running into the world, you focus the mind inward. So withdraw from the external and turn it internal. After you have done these six, then the seventh step is meditation. And what is meditation? Meditation is a constant flow of thoughts in a particular direction. And the direction that we recommend is that there is one consciousness, one Lord. Everything has emerged from Him. Just as there is one mud from which all mud pots, everywhere, anywhere in the universe, even in Mars or even in Venus, if somebody is making a mud pot, it is made out of mud. So there is one mud from which all mud pots and all cups and saucers and plates and jugs and jars and everything are nothing but mud, and mud alone appearing in different names and forms. So similarly, there is one consciousness called Brahman, and you know, Jesus and Buddha and Shankaracharya and Krishna and Shiva are all manifestations of that. I am also a manifestation of that. Just as a mud is a pot is nothing but mud with a different shape and form, right? There is a different shape. There is a shape of a cup or a saucer or a jug. So the shape is different, the form is different, the name is different. A cup is not a saucer is not a jug, jug is not a vase. but the essential nature is mud. So similarly, she and he and the tree and the plant and the animal and the bird and the fish, they are all different names, forms, but the essential nature and consciousness in all is one. So there is one Brahman, and that alone has expressed as everything. There is one consciousness. So he is me. I am also an expression of that consciousness. I am not separate. So that constant flow of thought in that direction is meditation. So in meditation, your mind is centered inward to the Lord's presence, and there is only one thought, and that should not only be in meditation but throughout the day. As often as possible, say that I am an expression of that Lord, and I am functioning because of him. Have the sense of gratitude and see the whole world as an expression of the Lord. So meditation, somebody asked Swami Chinmayananda, our founder, how long should I meditate every day? So he said 24 hours. Your meditation should be done 24 hours, not just 20 minutes or half an hour. Yes, you have to have structured meditation for 20 minutes or half an hour. But throughout the day, being a witness, in meditation, what we do is I am the consciousness and I witness the body, mind and intellect. So practicing that witness attitude throughout the day, having a sense of detachment from the body, mind and intellect, from the world of objects, emotions and thoughts, being a witness and understanding that that consciousness is me. So that Om, that consciousness, is nothing but me. And then the eighth and the final limb, which happens only to very advanced meditators, is a total merger. Samadhi means, samadhi means total abidance in that, where then that individual disappears. Then there is no person, but God alone. That's why Jesus said, the Father and heaven and I are one. He who had seen me had seen the Father. So he had understood that there is only one Father in heaven and we are all expressions of that. So he had no sense of ego. You know, thy will be done, O Father, not mine, not mine. He always said that, oh, your will should express, not mine. So that understanding, total merger, is the culmination of all of these. So you cannot just straight away say, you know, why is my meditation not... Like one teacher asked the student, student asked the teacher, he said, my meditation is very disturbed, you know, my mind is very agitated. I get up in the morning, I can't concentrate. Teacher said, this too shall pass. And so a week later he came, teacher, wow, it is so wonderful. My meditation is good. You were right. My mind is so quiet, so peaceful. I'm so happy. Thank you so much. Teacher said, this too shall pass. You know, it'll happen. You know, depending on your state of mind, it will be your meditation. One day your mind is peaceful, your meditation will be good. Second day, your whole day you have been fighting and angry and upset. And your mind is full of anger and all. And then you sit for meditation. What will you have? Only anger. So that's why they say, purify your mind, develop self-control, do some of this breathing, simple breathing. Withdraw from the objects of the world. Focus the mind on the self. And then meditation is a constant flow of thoughts in a particular direction. Just as a river is a constant flow of water in a particular direction. So when the mind's direction of flow is controlled and directed in one direction, and that is the inner self, that is meditation. And finally, the final culmination is total ending of the individuality, total ending of the thoughts. In deep meditation, there is not even thoughts, even are not there. Even I am meditating, that also disappears. The meditator is gone. There is no meditator, there is no meditating, there is no meditated upon. All three become one. You know, meditator, meditating, and meditated upon. All those three disappear. That's called the Triputi. When the three disappear, and that alone remains. So that is the final step. So that is the eightfold Ashtang Yoga, eight-limbed practice of Patanjali. I had some other information, but we don't have time today. So we'll maybe cover that some other time. I was going to talk a little bit about the different pranas or the physiological functions. But we are done, finished with our time today. So any questions or comments about anything we have talked?
The vapors, the air going in and out?
Just to be aware that, yeah, of the air moving in and out. You don't have to actually visualize the vapors, but you are aware that the air is moving in and the air is moving out, and the air is moving in and out. And ultimately, if it is done properly, ultimately the mind becomes so still that you withdraw, and then you know that you are breathing in and out, but you are unable to feel it. So that even that feeling disappears that I'm breathing. You know, when you're just observing the breath and observing the breath and keep observing, and after a while, the mind becomes so still that you want to, you can't even observe your breath. You become distant from the breath. So that's what. So being aware of the breathing, that I am breathing. Because normally we breathe, you know, 12 times a minute, you know, 24 hours a day, 365. We breathe constantly day and night in our sleep, but we are not aware of the breathing. So awareful breathing, so being aware of the breath, you know, taking deep breaths, expanding the lungs, because, and also being aware that when I'm breathing in, I'm taking all the good oxygen, you know, the Lord has provided, and I'm nourishing my body, you know, so breathe with that attitude. When you take a deep breath, oh Lord, thank you for this oxygen that you're giving that's going to nourish my blood and my organs and my, but, and then when you breathe out, Lord, I'm breathing out all my negativities, all my anger, all my greed, all my jealousy, and all the negative energy from my body is going out. So breathe with that attitude. So mindful breathing, and we'll be talking more about breathing in the next week. But yeah, that is it. So being aware of the breath and then mindfulness. Talking about mindfulness, we have a seminar on May 16th on Saturday. I'll have flyers next week. At Memorial Hospital. I think some of you might have received the email. Has the email gone? Everybody got it?
Yeah.
On mindfulness, the seminar, right?
Yeah.
If you haven't received it, let me know. We'll send it. It'll be on May 16th at if you're not getting email, it'll be on May 16th at Memorial Hospital. It'll be at 7:30 in the morning, 7:30 to 12. 7:30 to 8 is breakfast, and then 8 to 12 will be the seminar. And there is no cost. It is free and it is open to all, everybody. Even if you have your friends or somebody, you can bring them. So that is mindful breathing. So how to live in mindfulness, we'll be studying in that seminar. So we have three speakers. We have a psychiatrist, Dr. Gokhlani. Then we have a pastor. Her name is Barbara White. She's from the Center for Spiritual Learning here. And then the third one is Swami Ishwarananda, the Swamiji who comes here every few months. So three speakers. Well, it's a very good seminar. It should be nice. Any more questions?
If one pursues all the four paths, let's say, and achieve a modicum of success in at least one of the paths,
mm-hmm.
is that, will we have some kind of a self-realization and achieve some kind of success in those?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So there are four paths. The reason they have given four paths is because there are different kinds of individuals. See, not one individual is similar to another. There is one who is very, you know, likes to work. So you tell him, what can I do? He said, go out and build a house for, you know, Habitat for Humanity. Climb up on the roof and hammer the nails, or go to the kitchen and serve the food, or cook for the homeless, or... So he is ready to work, you know, or if you give him a project in the church or mission, he will say, okay, I'll do the fundraising project. So he will do everything, you know, do the publicity and take out the flyers and talk to people and call people on the phone, ask for donations. So that is called karma yoga. So this person loves to work. So you give him that job. Okay, that is through that you purify your mind. By doing things for others unselfishly, you reduce your vasanas, your selfishness, and then your mind, which is purer, comes closer to the truth. Then another somebody has a love. She loves children, she loves people, and she loves God. And so she says, I am not, you know, a worker. And again, I don't like to sit and study too much. But I can love God. I can sing songs. You know, some people are good singers, so they can sing beautiful bhajans or beautiful hymns for the Lord. They get up in a choir and sing, or in the temple and sing bhajans. They can compose poetry in praise of the Lord. They can, when they think about the Lord, they sit down and cry, their tears, you know, pour from their eyes, their heart melts, and they see the Lord everywhere, and they have no ego. So for such a person, path of love is given. Okay, you can love God. And for a third person, he said, I am a yogi, you know, I like to do all these yoga. So he will come and learn all, you know, all these bhujang asana and this asana and that asana and all those different asanas he will learn. And through that, as long as he's doing it with attention, and that I'm doing it for my, not only, see, a lot of times asanas nowadays have been corrupted into a physical thing, like this Bikram yoga, you know, that is a total corruption of, I don't know if you're familiar with Bikram yoga, where they heat the room to 110 degrees. And the room is super hot, and everybody is doing a very fast yoga, a lot of physical, and they sweat like anything. Yeah, it's good for physical exercise, but that is not truly yoga. You can call it a physical exercise, but at the end you are hot and you are sweating and you are running, and your mind is more disturbed than before you started. So the yoga should be done in a peaceful way, slowly, you know, with attention to each movement, so that, and paying attention to the self. So a person who is a yogi can do that. And then a person who said, I can't go out and build houses, I cannot cry for the Lord, I don't have that, and I don't enjoy asanas, I love to read. Okay, so path of knowledge is for you. You sit and read the book, and through knowledge you say, he is me, I am that, I am not this body, I am not the mind, I am not the intellect, I am the consciousness. And so while the he or she is working in the world, they constantly remember that. So each of those four paths can take you to the highest, but they say the path of knowledge is, and the path of love, these two will take you directly. The path of service or the path of yoga exercises help to purify the mind, but truly the knowledge is the best. When you sit down and read and think about who it is, that is the highest. But the path of love also, if you have a total surrender, in all the paths, in all the four paths, one should have a total surrender of ego. The other point that you were asking is that, can we practice all four paths? And what I find that ultimately they all work in your in yourself. If you're truly dedicated to the Lord, like say you go through the path of knowledge, you come to know, who is this God? Okay, he is the creator of this universe. He has given me everything, whatever I have. So then you develop gratitude, and then you develop love. So I love this Lord who has given me everything. So what happened? You have the path of knowledge and you have path of love. And then you start working for him. You say, whatever actions I'm doing it for the Lord. So what happened? You got Jnana Yoga, the path of bhakti, and the path of karma yoga. So the path of knowledge, the path of love, and the path of service all came. Another person who starts by serving the Lord, he says, I'm going to build, you know, church, or I'm going to work for my church. And then through working, he develops love for God. You know, this God who has, you know, given me everything, my abilities. And once he develops love, then he wants to know, who is this God? You know, what do they mean by God? So he takes up a book to read. So what happens is, you may be predominantly in the path of service or the path of love or the path of knowledge, but ultimately, a little of everything comes. It automatically will come. A person who loves God totally. I love God. I love God. Then what happens? I have to work for him. Everything I have is his. So I work for the Lord. And then again, I want to know, who is this God I am loving? You know, they say there is some God sitting somewhere in heaven. But what does he look like? What does he do? Okay, he has a form of Krishna or Jesus or Shiva, but really, what does he do? I mean, is he sitting there useless, or is he doing anything? So then you come to read about him. So what happens is, they are kind of parallel. But depending on your nature, you may be predominantly one or the other. And they all can take you to the highest. But I still believe that the knowledge is the greatest purifier. So you must have knowledge. You can love God, you can serve God, it's very good, but listening to who he is, and that's why I enjoy, you know, talking about him, because it helps to clarify my thoughts. So I think the path of knowledge is the best. Yes, is a direct path, right? All of them, like path of love will also take you there, but the path of love is not that easy. People think, oh, it's for the ignorant people who know nothing, they can sit and love God. But to love God and to totally surrender the ego is not very easy. It's very difficult, you know. The love means total identification, total surrender. So, and what I believe, in my opinion, practice all. What's wrong with that? Do some love, do some service, do some, what's wrong? Nothing wrong. Do some breathing. I have talked about that in another class on Sunday. You know, God has 1,000 names. You know, we have this Vishnu Sahasranama where they've given 1,000 names of God. And one of the names in that particular of 1,000 is called fort. You know, fort, you know, like a fort that you build to fight against, to protect against the enemy. So they say, why would you call God a fort? You know, you can call him loving, compassionate, kind, sweet. Fort, that seems like a strange name, you know, for God. Durga is a very strange name. So they say, when you say God is a fort, I was reading Swami Chinmayananda's commentary. He says the reason they call a fort, now suppose there is an enemy, you want to capture him, right? And he's hiding behind the fort. He has built a strong fort with the walls, you know, 20 feet high walls, and your even arrows cannot go, your, you know, bullets cannot go, nothing can penetrate. And I'm talking about in those days when they didn't have, you know, missiles and planes and all. You had to either shoot arrows or bows or spears. Now, how do you conquer the enemy? You know, suppose you want to defeat him. What do? You surround the fort from all sides. If you have enough army, you surround the fort so that they cannot escape. And sooner or later, their food will run out. You know, their ammunition will run out. Their people will get tired. And then, once they are tired, then you can attack them and capture them. So God is like a fort. You surround him from all sides. Don't let him escape. Surround him with karma yoga, do service, surround him with love, surround him with knowledge, surround him with breath control. All the four techniques you apply from all four sides so he has nowhere to escape. So you capture God. So that is the idea. That, to me, that is a very beautiful name of God. He's a fort. So means whatever means it takes, just do all. There's no harm, right? Doing knowledge and having love for God and serving him and breath control, there is no harm. None of them are going to hurt you. But predominantly, you can make one your predominant path, which is the one you enjoy the most. But there is no harm in surrounding him, so he can't escape. So he said, oh my God, I'm surrounded. Oh my God. He can't say, oh my God, because he is God. But he'll say, I'm surrounded. I can't escape because he has captured me from all sides. So capture him in your heart so he can't escape. So that's why the name Fort is a very beautiful name for God. So think about it. It's very nice. So, but it's a very good question. Thank you. I gave a long answer, but I hope it answered your question. Right. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, they're not exclusive. As we said, you can practice them, all four, but you have to pick one that is the best, works best for you, and concentrate more on that. But others will come automatically.